It's like, we're like remembering. That's what we're doing.
Hello, beloved listeners. This is Adrian Marie Brown, writers of stories and songs, emergent strategist and pleasure activist, living in the land of the Shikori, Spirura, Tuscarora, Eno, and Lumbee peoples. And this is How to Survive the End of the World, our podcast about learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. Now, when I say our, of course, I'm including my co-host and sister, Autumn, but she is currently on sabbatical, which is why I don't hear her voice starting us off. In her absence, and in honor of my book, Fables and Spells, I'm giving myself permission to go full witch this season and having conversations with some of my favorite witchy teachers. I'll also be reading you little bits and pieces from the book as we go. Now, what I mean by witch is people who work with elements of the natural world, including human nature, to generate more possibilities. Witching is engaging the essential natural world with magic or supernatural intention. The names for what I am including in witch work are shamanism, sorcery, seeing, healing, herbalism, midwifery and doula labor, root work, conjuring, ritual, spell casting, astrology and divination, sound baths, altar building, song channeling, all the work of building a direct relationship with the realm of the spirit, the holy, the ethereal. My guest today is one of my favorite people that we've had on the show. And when we had her on the show before, one of our actually top shows that we've ever had is Makani Temba and her brother Robin, DG Kelly, who are on for our sibling series. And now Makani is back. And part of the reason I brought Makani back is because I don't know everybody knowing about Makani's witchy business. So as someone who's gotten to co-facilitate with Makani several times, a lot of people know that she's a brilliant strategist, that she starts projects that help people think differently about how we create change in the world. But what I know as someone who's gotten to co-facilitate with her is she does it with an altar in the room. That she comes in and she explains to people, here's all the elements of nature that we're going to call on to help hold what we need to hold today. And I remember in one particular room that you were like, I've got some oranges over here because we need some sweetness in this room. And I do you remember that, Makani? Yes. So I want to bring you in. I want to ask you how you are right now. Oh, wait, one more thing to add to your bio is also that now she's got a whole cartoon that's coming out about her work, which is just a different way of weaving the spell. So Makani, welcome, my love.
Oh, I am so thrilled to be here. Yes. Yes.
Yes. How are you right now today?
I am really good. I am so grateful. I got to spend time in Southern California with my family.
Yay.
And we forget, right? We're running around. I think COVID, everything. We're remembering how important it is to connect with people we love in person. You know, we were acting like Zoom was really doing it.
But yeah.
Nope.
It's not the same. It's not the same as a hug.
No,
yeah. I'm really glad you got that time. You look gorgeous as always.
Oh, thank you.
I know, I knew when I was pulling people in for this and I'm like, I'm using the language of witch. But that's not necessarily how people would talk about themselves or describe their work. So I wanted to ask you, how would you identify that kind of magical work that you do?
That's a great question. I actually don't have problems with the word witch.
Yeah.
Because I know it's part of a tradition mm-hmm. that centers feminine power. Mm-hmm. And so I love that, right? Mm-hmm. Some people say shaman, mm-hmm. That centers a tradition. Some people will pull on Orisha energy, but what I know and what I learned from my mom, right, is
yes.
that it's all energy and that if you step into that place, then that is the magic,
yeah.
Yeah. And it's like that iconic line in The Matrix where they're like, you're bending the spoon. And they're like, and the child says, there is no spoon.
Right? That's right. That's right. Oh, I love that. Okay, good. So you start, you know, one of the things I've noticed in my witchy interviews, this is, I think, my fifth or sixth one now. I'm getting a rhythm. But one of the things I'm noticing is that witches anticipate the next question with their answers. Like they it's a pattern, and I'm very interested about it. So you started answering this a little bit, but when did you realize that you were drawn to this witchy work? Was it your mom that first sparked that in you? Were there other witches along the way?
You know, my mom is definitely a big part of it. When we were younger, we were really encouraged to find magic. Mm-hmm. And that was really awesome. And so, like, myself, my brothers, we were, you know, this is before my sister was born. I was a teenager when my uh-huh. sister was born. Milan, who many people know as well, who's also an awesome writer and person of magic.
Your family rolls thick.
Do you know, it yeah. really is true.
Yeah.
But, and my mom was always like, meditation, you know, she was a meditator. And you know, this was like 60s, you know, when it was just becoming a thing, but not so much, not that many Black mamas where we lived were meditators.
Yeah.
She was definitely that. And so I think that practice of being still helps you pay attention to and plug in to the fact that you are just this massive energy, that you're buzzing, that you can do things with your mind, you can imagine things. And I think ancestrally, you know, having both the Caribbean and the Southern
yeah.
thing where people were into, like, sometimes it was like cursing somebody, they're mad at somebody and they're like, get a lock of their hair, you know? Or, you know, or people would say, don't leave your hair in the brush. Somebody could take that and do something to you. So
I still get that warning all the time.
Right.
I still get that warning all the time.
Right. You grow up with this idea that that it's more than what you can see, and that people have power, you know, and all they need is a lock of your hair. And all kinds of things can happen. Right. So I think that level of both imagination and energy really drove it and grounded it and rooted it. And then as an organizer, you basically work in the magic of what happens when people come together. I mean, that's what organizing is, like, essentially. And then people are together and they're like chanting. They're doing,
exactly.
They're basically incanting power. And I remember when my daughter was about 14 and we went to this really big march in New York. No, she was 11 because it was 9/11. It was the bombing, and we went up to New York to be a part of the protest. We had actually lost family, you know, who were killed in the towers.
Oh, wow.
And we wanted to be part of, you know, this thing. And my daughter was just like, oh my God, I want to do this forever. Like, I want to be in a march. And it was February. It was cold as heck.
Yes.
And so what I think was another, it was like a reinforcing moment that this magic of when we get together, the way our voices vibrate when we're mm-hmm. chanting, the marching, the energy that happens when we're there in one purpose. You know, there is nothing like a big march.
No, there's
nothing. And that to me is an example of, like, that energy moving. And that's what we do. We're there to make that magic happen.
I really love that, because I often think of it as when we make ourselves one body, like when we make of ourselves one body.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I'm like, now we're something larger than we were before, something larger than we could be on our own. Which I think is witching, you know, like, I'm like, part of it is also, I've been, you know, I'm like, I know I do my share of mushrooms, but there's so much that feels alive in me about how we are interconnected and we are actually one entity. And
exactly.
Having all these divergent, disparate, seemingly contentious experiences, but still part of this one body. And then those marches and those organizing moments, some of the rooms we facilitated, there'll be this time where it's like, that's it. Here we are conspiring together. Here we are breathing together. Here we are moving together, moving for the sake of our whole body.
Because that's essentially who we are.
That's literally
who we are. All we're doing, it's a reunion. It's not even like we are a separate body. It's like, you know, we're like literally remembering.
Come through, Toni Morrison.
Remembering. That's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing. And I do think that while some of us get gifted this, that it's like, oh, you know, when you're in a room with Makani, you want to move towards that remembering. It's like you've got a fire in you. But I wonder, you know, I think for a lot of people, like, well, what if I don't have that? Or where does that come from? Or how do you develop that? And I always love to point out that, like, we come from a lineage, you know, like we don't just jump up fully formed and we don't just come out of nowhere, but we're in a long river of people who have been moving this way through whatever their time was and believing in the possibility of change inside of whatever their time was. So I want to ask you, who would you name as your witch ancestors? Is there a formal lineage to how you do your work? Would you say it's more of an informal, you know, like I say, I'm kind of a gathered intuitive witch. You know, I'm like, I just have cobbled it together and found my way. And, you know, but how would you speak about the lineage that informs your way of witching?
You know, I think it's kind of a combination, because I think in some ways that's how it works. We have guides. And then those guides inspire things that we then cobble, right? At least we think we're cobbling it, but who knows? It could be some awesome ancestor that's like, throw this in your way.
Yep.
And you think you cobbled it.
Actually, I'm just like, I don't know where this came from, but it's here now.
It's here right now. Yeah. So my mom definitely, my grandmother definitely. And then there were some folks who I know would never, ever, ever think of themselves as witches. And some people are going to feel like it would be sacrilegious to say that they are. So I'm not going to say that they're witches, but I'm going to say that they're part of the lineage.
Okay.
For me.
That's fair.
You know, and so I would say a person that I met and really influenced me so much before her passing was Betty Shabazz. And I only met her a couple of times, but what the turning point was for me was before I met her as a younger person, all my real role models besides my mom in organizing were men. And so I thought I used to have to talk like that and act like that. This is like teenage, you know, and then to come across someone who engendered so much feminine and was so clear that that was how she was going to make change in the world was interesting. And it also helped me really recognize my mom, because at that point as a teenager, I was rejecting a lot of what she was about, because I felt like it was
this mom,
right? Well, there's that part, right? Where you try to, you know, but there's also the story, right? The patriarchal story though, of what organizing is. And I was like, that's not organizing. That's just some love shit. I don't even know what that's about. I can't even get with that, because I need to be angry. And sometimes you have to see somebody who's not related to you, right?
That's right.
To see, and then you're like, oh, I get it. And because, you know, love is the ultimate witchy force, right? It's the ultimate thing, right? And
it really is the ultimate,
right? And so I feel like Betty Shabazz was really important. Of course, my mom. I felt like there were people like Sonia Sanchez, who every time she stepped to the mic and anytime I was around her over the years, and I still feel that way every time I'm around her, that she brings a spell.
She brings a spell.
You know, and there was a moment, we have a friend who's an ancestor, Damu Smith. He was a very well-known environmental justice activist who passed away of cancer. And we were having this thing for him, and she stopped everything, took out a white handkerchief, and created this energy. And then she had us say these words, and she was putting it into this handkerchief, right? And all of this thing. And I was like, I need to come out the closet around my,
That's
like
right.
she really inspired me to be like, why do you not bring this into your work?
You got it.
You know, and the other person I just have to shout out is Aisha Rashid.
Yes.
So because
I
she
love
also
that.
is, I think, one of my teachers,
Yeah, she's going to be
and
on
one
this
of the,
podcast too.
yes,
Yes.
because she is, she's definitely one of my teachers. And there's things I learned from her in the most gentle, tender ways that that just really shape my practice in being in the world.
I love that. Thank you. That lineage feels like, I mean, I think this when I hear lineage, but I'm like, oh, you know, you're doing something right if that's your people, right? Like, you know, sometimes I'm
Yes.
like, I don't know if I believe in me all the time, but I believe in my people. Like, I believe in the lineage
Exactly.
that I believe in the teachers. And yeah, good. I love hearing that. And if more people occur, you know, feel free to weave them in. So I named one of the ways that I have witnessed your witching, and I'd love for you to share with us what are all the ways you see and experience yourself doing that witching work.
You know, the facilitation piece is a big part of it because that feels the most like moving energy and holding energy. I started doing this form. It's like a weird thing that I gather my thoughts around, where I'm thinking about who all is showing up and what do I think they're worried about. And, you know, I started being really intense about my prep now, right? To the extent that I have that information. And what's been happening for me that the more I can think about who's showing up, the more I can show up with whatever the tools are that are gonna support me. So I'm not gonna call any names or groups so people be like, oh man, did she do that when we was there? But you know, I'll just say that there have been some facilitations, some I'm just going to say sort of recent. I'm not going to say how recent, where I knew that as I really meditated and thought about who was showing up and what kind of energy they were going to have, that there was going to be a lot of pain and a lot of and grief, but in a different way, not like loss in the ways that we think of like losing a person. But anyway, it just made me think about, so then I was like, what herbs, what scents, what's going to be important about the room? And even though this was a group that you would, that's not into that at all. So that meant that I had to kind of play it off, you
Exactly. You're like, don't mind me with my sweet stuff over
Right,
here.
exactly. You know, and I'm like setting it up, and we're like in this very non-witchy space. Let's put it that way. Like this very non-witchy space, like a kind of a government tea kind of space. And I could just see the things start to fall away. I was just like, and I could see the mask drop. I could see the pretense drop. I could watch things fall away, and people who hadn't hugged each other in a while. It wasn't like I said everybody hug each other. It just, you know, and it just really reinforced for me the power of this medicine that we're given, and that in organizing and in change work, I think it's good to do as much of it as we can. And we're in a place where we're under so much attack. And so I feel like we're called to think about what can we do that's going to help us counter this madness that's really just on the physical plane. So it's really no contest, right? For the power we actually have. If we step into
Beloved survivors, it's autumn. Wow, I've been loving this witch season.
I trust that you have too, because it's just excellent. I'm still on sabbatical for a few more months, but Adrian and I did just drop a new Patreon exclusive episode over at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. And it's a voice memo conversation that we recorded over the course of a few weeks. So if you love me and miss hearing my voice, if you love our show enough to listen to Adrian and I talk about new love, about aging, about roaches and utopias, you can head over to our Patreon and become a patron at any level, and you'll get immediate access to this most recent exclusive episode, as well as our collection of show merch, all of the Ask Us Anything episodes that we've made, all of it is yours. I miss you. Adrian and I thank you for your support. We love you. Yeah, and go to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow to check out all the juiciness. Okay, talk soon.
You have this really deep musical practice as well that is something I really love and honor about you. And I wonder if there's a way that that also shapes what you believe is possible, or shapes, or if you use, sometimes I use music to shape myself before I go into an encounter or before I go to do other kinds of work. And I'm slowly starting to understand that that too is some part of this.
Yes. Yes. All of that, like the music beforehand, mm-hmm. right. And the space to do that, the music to sanctify the space, you know, to have the music going right yep. before anybody's in there is as important as the sage or whatever else to me, because that energy is important. I also encourage when I can, for us to create a playlist together so that everybody has their medicine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And if we can't do it beforehand, then we'll doing it in the room.
Yeah.
And it changes things. When people hear that song, that's that song that helps them shift. Right. And then I think, you know, music is, that is to my personal most important medicine. It is. Yeah. Everything. So it is important. I mean, I think about like, what is it that will be helpful in terms of the energy of the room? Is it going to be like people need to move their hips and do that? Or is it that,
yeah.
you know, and, you know, every sound corresponds to a different aura, to a different chakra, to a yeah. different, you know. And so I do think about that. I think about like, what chakras do we need to be in? Or do we need to be in some sacral, you know, do we need to be in our heart?
Exactly.
Do we need to like get out of the sacral and be up in the crown and to think, or maybe all of it, like music mm-hmm. playlists that'll take us up and down through the chakras. I do think about that.
I think about that too. I've been like basically spell casting myself to sleep these days.
Yes.
Where I'm like trying to wean myself. I'd gotten really hooked on ZQL.
Hey.
They say it's like, this is not addictive. I was like, sure. Until you need to sleep every night. Why do you help? So I've been like, okay, how do I wean myself off of that? And I found that listening to those solfeggios, those like chakra.
Yes. Yes.
Binaural sounds. I'm like, oh, this is how I do it. This is how I get myself, you know, back into my, in my, like, it's basically like creating a river of calm around myself mm-hmm. through the sound vibrations and then laying into that, right?
Yes, I do that I literally, this is probably too much information, but do that around my digestion, you know, like,
yes.
I feel like I'm struggling with my digestion.
And
I will like throw in one of those, yes. you know, that music for that chakra. Like, yeah. come on now. Yes.
Let's move the root. Yeah, that. Yes. And then my friend taught me an abdominal massage I've been doing every morning.
Yes.
And I'm just like, look, this body, you know, I really have a different, deep, 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 like worshipful appreciation of my body right now. And I'm just like, oh, like the world is a dance between how I take care of this vessel and then what bodies of water I put myself into, you know?
Yes.
And I'm like, yes. I can put myself in the most painful, stressful bodies of water I can treat this vessel like it doesn't need any care. And then that's the experience of this world that I'm going to have, is one where I can't handle it, right? Or I can treat this vessel like this is the altar. This is the sacred vessel, and I'm moving myself towards the healing water. And it's the same world, it's the same earth, it's the same people, but I'm having a fundamentally different experience inside of it.
No, it's so true. And then the other piece too, relate, which is like, yes.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, I won't get into all the details of it, because I know there'll be some, not anybody who listens to this show would not think I'm crazy, but there are other people probably think I would be crazy. But I remember having this really beautiful encounter with Oya, who's an Orisha that some people may know. And not going into the whole thing, but what became clear to me was that, you know, we're in this life, in these bodies, the thing that distinguishes this part of our living, because we're eternal beings, right?
Yes.
Is being in these bodies to feel, to have these experiences, because that's not what you get to do after you leave the body in the same way, right? And so, so there's some things I have given myself a little more grace around.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, wow, I love food. I love how good food tastes.
Yes.
You know? And at first I was like, oh man, I'm going to try to not deal with food on that level. I want to, I was like, I'm going to get to food where I'm just going to like eat it for fuel.
It's pure
and I'm
food.
Not gonna wait and not like, I'm no seasoning, no anything. I'm going to try to get to that, that really, you know, ascetic space.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then I had this,
my
this kind of, right. Well, also, but I also had this kind of teaching, you know, this sort of teaching to me that, yeah, no, that's not what you, you know, that, that there's, this is what you're here to do. So
get it,
you know? And so I feel like I've had more grace around that. I've had more grace around like my mom, because, you know, we don't want her to do things to her body that are, you know, that are bad and hard and will, you know, make her not be, feel like dis-ease.
That's right.
But also we're like, she loves her sweets. And so it's like how to have that dance where you are like taking care of your body in that way, but also recognizing that this is the spaceship that allows us to get that feel good, to have these feelings, whether it, whatever this sensuality is, whether for you it's like that perfect chocolate bar or that perfect chocolate person or that whatever that is, right?
You know me so well.
I know us, you know, I know us.
Oh my, chocolate people are delicious. Okay. okay, and you know, all right. Let me recenter myself, because it's just, it really, I feel you, I mean, all the things. I wonder if there have been places where, you know, I think about the political act of doing this podcast, doing this season, doing the book that I did. For me, the coming out and just being like, I'm not just, you know, being strategic, or I'm not just focusing on relationship. Like I'm trying to tap into something larger than myself and older than myself to move the work. And mostly I feel safe and okay in that. And then there are moments where I'm like, okay, I'm taking a big risk, like in the time space continuum, you know? And I wonder if there's times like that for you over the years and currently where you feel like, oh, this is a risk. You know, you spoke a little bit of like, when I'm facilitating a group that doesn't roll like that, you know, I have to be strategic about how I still do what I need to do. But yeah, have there been times and places where you were like, I have to be brave to do what I need to do here, or I feel a little scared if people were to know who I am?
You know, definitely, I feel less and less scared as I get older. You know, I think I was, you know, looking the way that I do.
Gorgeous.
Now, you know, especially then. I, you know, I was for some reason really worried and a bit obsessed with people feeling like I was really Black, you know? And so I wanted to not do anything that, you know, that would mess with my credentials at one point. Now I'm like, yeah, if y'all don't know I'm Black by now, we'll forget it. You know, I can't really help
not
you.
Not my job, yeah.
Right? And so, so I did have times where there's things about like my Caribbean upbringing and the spirituality and stuff that felt like at one point felt like it was going to mess with my quote, whatever this thing I had in my head, that was whatever the true official Blackness was, you know, and lean more into the Southern or lean more into not the eating part. God, ate Caribbean food, never not ate the food, but you know, but so did you go through that? And I felt like that my hiding around that was part of that, right? Sure. Like, because people would literally say to you, that's not Black, or that's not Black, or that's not Black. And then I think by the time I got to my 30s, it became less and less of a thing. And then I also appreciated, because I think some of my teachers were also Indigenous folks who I worked with over the years. And so grateful for the way in which that, you know, folks never fronted, you know, like people just brought it, right? And I was like, I knew about that. And I think it got to the point where so many of us as folks who are Black or Black and something, we would be in these spaces, these multicultural spaces. And then people would act like we had no culture and or we had none of that. And I have literally been in spaces where Black people have opened up, opened up a space. And I've had younger Indigenous folks be like, you didn't do it right, because they didn't do it the way they did it. Yeah. And then you have these tensions. And you think, wow, because many of us haven't been practicing in public, and this is becoming a new thing, then people are getting used to this. Or I was at things at South by Southwest sometimes, where there's been like a little bit of a tension. It's less now, but the tension started as people started coming more out and saying, okay, well, we have things that we hold, we have rituals, we have things. And I think now there's more space for them to just be together and us to realize how much we learn from each other. And, but I am grateful for so many of my, especially Indigenous women, that have, and Two-Spirit people who have really held that and inspired me. So yes, it's true. I have felt a little like anxious and worried. And I think also what I worry about is when I'm doing things with people who are super Christian, because I work with all kinds of folks. And so I'm always having to bridge, you know, because the right wing attacks, you know, our people, and, you know, when they say these crazy things like don't talk about social justice, or this thing is not really Jesus, or, you know, and so I find myself in spaces as a preacher's kid too, like saying, hey, this is the Jesus that I know. I have a few Bible passages in my pocket I have to pull out sometimes, you know, and then sometimes I remember being at a session with a group of Black women, and I refer to Harriet Tubman as one of my Orishas. And somebody came up to me just really, shaking, just really upset, you know, and feeling like I was taking Jesus out of the story. So we had to have a good conversation about that, you know, and it was good. She was fine after, but
had to check in and be like, hold on now.
But love, you know, because she felt like her foundations were being attacked.
I feel like I'm really grateful for the paths you just wove into that, right? Because I feel like so much of this is trying to survive in a culture that's telling us there's one right way. And whatever that right, you know, so initially it's like, okay, well, there's one right way, it's white supremacy. There's one right way, it's this colonized, capitalism, world, racial capitalist worldview, right? This is the one way. And then as we try to resist that, we also have to resist the idea that there's just one way to be, right? So it's like, oh, there's not just one way of the Black church, or one way this path for being a witch, or one way this path for Blackness. It's actually multitudinous in every way at all times, because that's who we are. And, but yeah, sometimes it requires great bravery to just be who we are. And I think that, you know, witches have paid a huge price for that.
Without doubt, mm-hmm. without doubt. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot around this dying patriarchy that yeah. is kind of sputtering. And I remember that there was this great, amazing like mentor and leader. He's an ancestor now, Rafiq Bilal, who was in the Bay Area for many years. He had this space, actually music space, poetry space, called the Upper Room. And he was very much into Egyptian astrology. And he would talk about the fact that we were ending the end of the patriarchal epic and moving mm-hmm. into the feminine, and, you know, and all of what that meant, right? And so it would be this, you know, for me, it was just sort of this eye opener. I think I was like 30 or something when he would talk about this. And now you can still see, you can still see it unfolding.
Yes. Because an age lasts so much longer than we also understand it to. I think right now we have such short attention spans and such a short sense of how long change takes. And I keep trying to like widen out and be like, if something has been in place for centuries, right?
Yes.
It takes a while for that to actually pivot, and we have to be part of it.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that is actually a very important point that I've been thinking a lot about. First, before I do that, I need to shout out one more teacher,
Yay.
Mentor, who I know would never call herself that, I would say. Just sort of a magical being, shaman, and that, and also in the Bay Area, Mama Ayana Mashama, who's for me really important. And mm-hmm. I need to say that in terms of my own lineage, even though I know she would point out that she is really not much older than me. So let me be clear.
Hey, really, okay.
It's not like a maternal lineage, it's more like a sisterly mm-hmm. lineage. That said, you know, I oftentimes right before I wake up, I get like this, like a little message, like a little, like, this yes. is something to think about yes. for the day. And one time I was this image of people kind of like bending the arc of justice, mm-hmm. right? You know, people say the arc of justice bends, you know, the arc of, you know, bends toward yes. justice. And it was like all of these people sort of like, almost like it was like a hard taffy, and we're like moving it. And it was just this reminder, right? Mm. That we bend it. Like you're saying, it's like we bend it. It doesn't just naturally bend,
no.
right? We bend it, we shape it. And the more we bend it, the more it bends, right? And the more yeah. we touch it. And that was the other thing. It's like the heat of our energy makes it more pliable, right?
That's right.
It makes it move. And
oh,
and it was just
alchemy.
Such an interesting kind of thing, right? To be like right before I wake up, I mean, I'm sleeping and seeing this. It's like the, I could see the places where hands were touching it. And it was like kind of becoming more liquid, and the places where they weren't, it wasn't touched, it was more solid. And then these hands just kind of just working it, just moving it.
That's
beautiful. And the more hands, right? The more hands. The more hands. So it's true. Like you say, we are here working it, making it more pliable, making it work for us. Yeah. And that whatever direction we move it, and that's part of the spell too, right? Is
yeah.
to literally put our hands on it.
That's right.
You know, metaphysically, you know, quantumly, whatever, right? And just like, we work it.
I'm so glad you mentioned the quantum piece, because one of the quotes I think of from you often is that we are, I think at terms I've heard you say an inch away from freedom. I've heard you say a minute away from freedom. And there's this sense that it's an accumulation that would allow us to transcend a portal or just literally step over into another world. Could you speak a little bit about your concept of this quantum shift that's possible for us inside of time and space and the organizing we're doing?
Absolutely. I mean, it's something I hold really close. And however it was revealed to me, it was probably one of those before I wake up.
Yes.
You know, moments. Whispers, mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, this, it's not even a millisecond, yeah. You know, it is what it is. I really believe that. And that's part of what we understand around quantum physics, mm-hmm. is that we can actually move at the space of, at the pace of thought, at the speed of thought, which is mm-hmm. less than a millisecond, mm-hmm. right? Exactly. But it does require the actual energy. And so, and it requires practice to have the kind of focus, right? That's in some ways, that is the most witchy thing of all. Like the ones who are the great sort of accomplished superpowers are the ones who have this control over thought, right? Yes. And every culture teaches us that. There's no culture that doesn't say that that's what we should be doing, right?
Everybody's mastery. On point with this.
Yes, it doesn't matter. You know, you'll be in the Himalayas, you'll be in the Congo, you'll be in, you know, in wherever in so-called South America, in Peru or whatever, in the Maya lands, folks are saying the same thing. Buddha says it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Miss Bessie down the hall, everybody who's spending any time with themselves are coming to it.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing it a bit, you know? I feel like, again, I keep being like, and this thing. Share this magic. So which skills do you wish everyone had in this moment, and that people were practicing, that people were cultivating in this moment?
I think what I wish is it's kind of like, I was trying to think of the way to say this, but I'll just say the witch skill of grounding, mm-hmm. that is, regardless of what's happening around you, you know who you are.
Yes, right? That's right.
Which is a practice. And I think related to that, the witch skill of understanding abundance. You know, yeah. Because I think that what happens, unless you are really struggling with a lot of things, usually when you come into this sort of witchiness, it comes from a place where you know that there's more than what you can see.
That's right.
Right. I mean, some people are like, I hate so-and-so down the street. Can someone tell me a spell where I can just mess with them? But most people aren't like that, right?
That's right. Most people aren't.
You know, yeah, we're not there. But this idea that regardless of what you see in front of you, you don't have to come for somebody, because there's enough.
There's plenty.
And I feel like that rootedness and mm-hmm. that sense of abundance will get us so far.
I love that. My last question that I have for you is really rooted in, you know, I've been in this process of like, there's a way we show up in the world where people start to be like, oh, you know everything. You really know what you're doing. You've got this figured out. And from inside of myself, at least, I'll often be like, what? No, I am a mess. I am trying to figure out how to be. And I'm healing. I'm still healing. And for me, healing comes in these waves. You know, it'll be like, oh, now I'm in this cycle that might take a couple of years to learn something about myself. And so I often think, how can I be as intentional as possible about the spells that I'm casting and the witch work I do while I'm healing, right? Given that I'm like, I don't know everything, I'm figuring it out, and you know, I still have this thing to offer. I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that and how you navigate.
Yeah, that's a real thing. You know, I feel like for me, there's like big buckets in my life where I feel like, oh, I think I'm really close to kind of getting this. And then others where I'm like, oh, Lord.
I'm like, why is this bucket so big? I feel like I'm in the ocean.
Right. You know, because they're personal and you swim in them and you're like, wow. And then you discover, and you're always discovering new places, new ways in which your apprenticeship is still unfolding. Right. And so that's a real thing. And then I think what I also remember is I cast no spell by myself. Right. That there's so whatever it is that I don't know or don't have, I'm in the universe. I'm part of that oneness. And if I can keep remembering and keep reconnecting and keep reconnecting and keep reconnecting whenever I'm starting to cut myself off from the energy and get like, oh man, what's up with me?
Yes.
It makes such a huge difference.
I really love that. Yeah. That really resonates with me, Makani. You know, one of the practices I'm doing for this podcast is I'm reading a spell or two at the end of each one, because it's part of that. You know, it's like, oh, even though things are hard right now, I'm still casting these spells and writing these spells. And actually today, mostly they're from Fables and Spells, but I had one come through yesterday in response to this news about this young man, Ralph Jarl, and the storyline, the story that I heard was that he was given an address. He was going to look for his siblings and he was supposed to go to 115 something Terrace, and he went to 115th Street or something like that. Ended up at the wrong place. And the 84-year-old man, white man who opened the door, shot him in the head. And then as he was down, shot him again in the arm. And Ralph, the 16, had to scramble to another neighbor's house where they made him lay on the ground while they called for someone to come. And it's such a familiar story, you know? So when I hear these stories, it takes a while sometimes for me to let the emotion come through. And I woke up yesterday morning and it was just sitting at the front of my mind. And it was like, you need to write a spell about this. And I was like, I don't know how to write a spell about this, you know? And they were like, get out of the way. You don't know, you know? And I was like, I don't know how to make it pretty. I don't know how to make it profound. I don't know how to write anything about this. And they were like, well, just let us write something. So I want to read what came through, which is a spell or a poem called At the Door. So At the Door goes like this. Don't shoot. There's a black boy at the door looking for his siblings. Don't shoot. There's a young black man ringing the doorbell. Don't shoot. There's a black child at the door and he's lost. Don't shoot. There's a brother at the door looking for his family. Don't shoot. There's a baby at the door trying to get home. Don't shoot. There is life at the door moving towards life. Don't shoot. There is a neighbor at the door. There is a need at the door. There's a person at the door. There's a future at the door. There's a story at the door. You can help write it towards coming home, towards a safe ending, towards a next breath. Oh, holy hell. Don't knock. Don't get lost. Don't need. Don't seek. Don't run out of gas. Don't let your phone die. Don't go for a walk. Don't go for a drive. Don't play on the playground. Don't blast your music. Don't laugh out loud. Don't let them see you. Don't have a heart attack. Don't wonder or wander. Don't approach with innocence. Don't center with a deep breath. Don't pray as you ring the bell. Don't smile as you realize your mistake. Don't make any mistakes. Don't whistle. Don't flirt. Don't rest down your vigilance. Don't be you. Don't be seen. Don't breathe. Don't even breathe. Child, there is a hunter at the door. I just feel so like angry. Like I have this mother, auntie, human anger. I think about all the people in my life who have been in a place where they needed help and couldn't ask for it because it was too dangerous to even ask for help. And I think about the babies in my life who are going back and forth to school and on buses. And like, yeah, I just think about there's just so many. And this one lives. Ralph is breathing right now. He's breathing right now. So I know there's a blessing in this. I know there's some possibility in this. But I also feel that I'm just like, how is this noose still so tight?
Right. And also, like, what does it mean? I mean, as a mother of sons and daughters, what does it mean to just live your life so concerned, so anxious? Like, what does it do to your heartbeat? How does it change the whole of your body? And knowing that it doesn't matter if we have the talk is not the thing.
No, there's no
And
talk.
people keep talking about the talk, right? But I'm like, who talks to these hunters?
Exactly.
Who talks? What is it that happens for, like, that person's grandson or granddaughter to say, look, you shouldn't be answering the door
The gun in
with a
your hand.
gun, like before it even happened, because they knew.
Yes.
They already knew that that person did that.
Yeah.
So where's the intervention?
Yeah.
And maybe what it is like my grandfather, who was a minister, they used to do this thing where they would get on these buses and go to South Boston and pray for the white people every year, once a year. And at first I thought, this is so corny. You know, like when I was like
But
the 15
seriously,
Afro whatever thing. But and now I've over the years I've come to see like we probably need some kind of demonstration that is this mythology that's disrupted
every
everything,
single thing.
and that what we I think are called to do in this period is, and this is why folks are coming so hard against teaching the history and allowing people to our children of all races to open their hearts, like the banning of School Trip, right, as a book, right, which is the
Wild.
cutest, loveliest, children's book among the many others that are banned. But I think that this is one of those moments where this matters, this what people learn, how people understand each other, and this hatred and this fear, like we have to take it up in particular kinds of ways. And that our white-bodied siblings have to intervene.
In
They have
specific
to take
ways.
that. I mean, I appreciate them being at our rallies, and that's important. But folks have to really intervene and stand up because we're going to keep having these conversations if they don't.
Ashe, ashe, ashe.
Shake these bones, shake these bones, oh God, shake these bones, shake
Hi,
these bones, oh God, shake
I
these
miss
bones,
you.
shake these bones, oh
It's
God,
Autumn
shake
again.
these bones,
Thanks for listening to our show. You can make a sustaining donation to our work by visiting our page at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. You can also find us on Instagram at endoftheworldpc. How to Survive the End of the World is produced and edited by the incomparable Zach Rosen. Music for our show comes from Tunde Olaniran, Mother Cyborg, and the Bengtsons. Talk to you soon.
Tackle myself to ground. You know I gotta shake these bones, shake.